Welcome to the latest episode of the Escapism Podcast. I'm your host, Terrell. Just to be clear, there have been a few changes. So this podcast was formerly named Mind of the Escapist. But what happened is I went on a little hiatus late last year. It ended up lasting 4 months, and I've come back now rejuvenated, ready to relaunch this podcast. And I wanted to give it a much simpler name, so I've gone with the name Escapism. You can find this podcast on all of your digital streaming platforms that supply podcasts, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. A new thing I'll be doing also is you'll be able to find me on TikTok and find the video versions cut down into little clips on TikTok of this podcast as well. So be sure to follow me on Escapism Podcast at TikTok to see those clips and to keep up to date with anything I'm doing with this podcast. But let's talk about today's topic at hand, which is Dune Part 2. I've been anticipating this film for quite some time. I was a fan of Denis Villeneuve's Part 1, which came out in 2021. That film came out during a time where I was going through quite a lot. It was quite an emotionally turbulent time for me, and I had just read the book about a month before the movie came out, so I think that increased the impact of the film for me. And ever since that film was made, I'd been anticipating the part two. Of course, after the box office success of that first film, they announced they were going to go ahead with the part two, and I'd been eagerly anticipating it until it released last week. I've seen it twice, so I saw it for the first time this past Saturday in 70mm IMAX at the BFI IMAX cinema in London. And then I watched it again yesterday in the regular format at my local cinema. The first thing that struck me when I watched Dune Part 2, and the first thing that was immediately obvious to me when I walked out of that cinema and I was discussing it with my friend that I was with, is that I felt Dune Part 2 was a very overwhelming experience, but in the best way possible. And I remember saying to my friend that I feel like this will take days, potentially weeks, to fully process. And one of the main reasons for that is Dune Part 2 is a film with tremendous scale, but also has an equally large philosophical base with philosophical themes and explorations of faith, religion, prophecy, and power. And impressively, the film doesn't actually get undermined or too convoluted by its themes and how much it's striving for on that side of things. But at the same time, it still does present a lot to you in one sitting. So I will say that you may watch this film and find you may want a second viewing to really take it all in a second time and process it all, because it is a lot to take in. The experience as a whole, especially in 70mm IMAX, was completely transportive. I felt like I was in Arrakis for those 2 hours, for those 3 hours even, and I completely forgot that I was watching a cinema screen. And one thing I will say, this film is 2 hours and 45 minutes long. For a film of that length, this is one of the best paced films I've ever seen when it comes to having a runtime that long, because it barely felt like it reached 2 hours, let alone almost three. And that's a credit to the editing of this film and how it's structured, because this film's structured in a way where you get a lot of dialogue sequences within it and a lot of information put forth to you, a lot of development, story development, and both character development. But spliced between those moments are little vignettes of action which kind of keep your adrenaline pumping. And the dialogue sequences are very interesting anyway, and that kept me engaged anyway, because that is a really engaging aspect of this whole world and story. But then having those action bits spread within it really helped pace the film in a really fast way, where it just flew by for me. And I'd say it's even better, it's better paced than the first film. And I thought the first film was really good anyway, but I'd give 5 stars to the first film. Love that movie. But I think this is a better paced film due to the way that it's structured, especially with the action. And as I said prior, the film is a film that demands your focus and attention. So it's one of those ones that you really do have to be switched on when you watch it and you want to be focused. And I was so locked in and focused on that story that the runtime just flew by completely. Visually, this film is just tremendous. So Greg Fraser's the DP for this film. He shot films like The Batman. That's a recent film he did. He did the cinematography for The Mandalorian, for example. And Greg Fraser's cinematography, paired with Denis Villeneuve's direction, creates an avant-garde-esque visual style that results in some of the most visually satisfying and visually stimulating images I've ever had the pleasure of witnessing on a cinema screen. And this sets the film apart from your traditional blockbuster, in every way. Film is a visual medium, and these filmmakers are able to craft something that takes full advantage of that with Dune Part 2. And Dune Part 2 will remind you that most films you watch nowadays don't take full advantage of the visual medium. The cinematography satisfies me in this film to such a strong degree, and what I realized when watching the movie and assessing it afterwards was one of the key reasons why it satisfies me so much. Is that it provides the same creativity and variety of perspectives within its shots that I appreciate within anime frames. I'm a big fan of anime. I love watching anime. I get very inspired as a creative when I watch anime because of the different shots, the different, use of color, the different framing, the blocking, and the way that the film was shot, the way that Dune 2 was shot reminded me of that because nothing in this film is shot in a generic way. And it's the work of a true visionary, and you can feel it. And not to bash on other films, but if I'm going to use Marvel and their recent run of films in recent years as an example, you look at their films and you see it, and the visuals and the whole look of the film, for the most part, because they've been shooting on the volume so much, it looks like actors stood against a 2D backdrop. It's not immersive whatsoever. It looks like actors in a studio acting against a green screen or against the volume, and that's usually what it is. And you don't have any sense of immersion or realism to the frame. And the way that the actors are framed and the way the action is framed within those shots is just very bland, very generic. If people were to start making AI movies, that's how I'd expect it to look. Whereas Dune is like a breath of fresh air in terms of how it captures the environment, how it captures the characters, how the score is implemented within that to create a true audio visual experience that is only comparable in recent years to films like Oppenheimer. Films like The Batman and other films from Denis Villeneuve, like Dune Part 1, Blade Runner 2049, etc. Dune assaults your senses with so much outstanding imagery that I struggle to remember all of it. I was seeing people post like images and GIFs of scenes from the movie, a couple of days after I'd seen it for the first time, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that shot existed. And that's because there's so many fantastic and memorable shots in this movie. You just can't possibly take it all in and remember it all off one viewing. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go back that second time and soak up the movie again before reviewing it and before talking about it. And frame after frame of this movie is mesmerizing, and it starts to feel like you're watching an art installation in motion. It's that beautiful. Denis Villeneuve, I can't sing this man's praises enough, as a director. I think he's fantastic. I feel very grateful to have witnessed Denis Villeneuve, his English language films in real time. So I haven't actually seen any of his films prior to Prisoners, but Prisoners was the first film of his that I saw, and I saw that at the cinemas back in 2013. And I've seen every one of his films in the cinema since, except for Enemy. And I'm just grateful to have witnessed a director in their prime operating at that level with that level of consistency for a decade, and to have witnessed that happen in real time. Because in my opinion, with no exaggeration, Denis Villeneuve is one of the greatest directors of his generation, and arguably one of the greatest directors of all time. I almost don't think it can be disputed anymore. I mean, he's gone on one of the most impressive directorial runs I think I'll ever see in my lifetime, and I'm extremely grateful for it. He, in this movie, and he did it in the part one as well, but in this movie in particular, Denis Villeneuve clearly graduated from the Peter Jackson school of showcasing armies with breathtaking scale. You get those big, expansive shots of large armies, ready to go to war in this movie, and that's something that I really loved about the Lord of the Rings movies. Now, if you don't know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy is my favorite trilogy of all time. They're my favorite films ever. And I used to always get filled with adrenaline whenever I saw those shots of large-scale armies marching into war, or a foreboding shot of an army, and okay, this army is going to come into play at some point later down the line. And I got that same feeling with some of the shots that Denis Villeneuve was able to translate to screen with Greg Fraser in this movie. It'll definitely benefit from a second viewing to process it, and I've, as I said already, and form a more concrete opinion. And that's another reason why I wanted to wait to see it a second time before reviewing this film, because I was a little unsure about a couple aspects of Dune Part 2 after walking out of it the first time. And I think that was because I was just so overwhelmed by the experience as a whole. There were little details such as Paul Atreides and his character, and what happens with his character as his character develops throughout the film. I felt certain aspects of his development may have happened a bit too quickly. The villainous character, Fade Rotha, played by Austin Butler, as much as I love that performance and that character, I felt like he wasn't featured enough in the film. And it was interesting to watch it a second time just to like really hone in on those aspects and assess them with a more clearer eye now that the weight of expectation had been removed, and just to see it more for what it was and assess it more cleanly. And having done that, I must say that those concerns I had, I think the fact that I wanted more Fade Rotha is a positive. It goes to show that the film did a great job with portraying that character. I wouldn't call it a criticism that he's not in the film a whole lot, because the film, he serves his purpose in the film very well. So I won't criticize the film for not having him in there longer than it did. But I think that's a sign of them doing such a good job that I wanted to see him more. As for Paul's arc in this film, watching it the second time, I did realize that I don't think it did rush to his character development, in all honesty. I thought they actually handled that and paced that pretty well throughout the film. And I guess, you know, I've got part of the way through the review and I haven't actually spoken about what the film is about. So for those of you that are unaware, if you haven't seen Dune Part 1, you'll need to see that before you watch this film, because Dune Part 2 picks up right where the first one left off, where Paul Atreides and his mother Jessica are now out in the desert with the Fremen. And Paul is wanting to learn the ways of the Fremen to survive and then get vengeance against the Harkonnens who kill his father. And that's the extent and the place that we're left in at the start of this movie. And then we get a big development as the film goes on, as multiple characters have a lot going on between them. And I think that's, for me, that's a sign of a great movie sequel. If I think of all the classic movie sequels that I can think of that I'd hold in high regard, they usually take the characters and their journeys from part one and really put them through the ringer and really start, you know, you really start to see these character arcs branch out into unexpected places where real adversity faces the characters, where they get real choices that they have to make that can have very stark consequences. You know, a lot of the greatest sequels I can think of have elements like that, and Dune Part 2 is no exception to that. You've got Paul Atreides, which is going through, who is going through a huge development in this movie, has a lot of conflicts within that he has to deal with, and if you've seen the first movie, you know that he deals with a lot of visions. He has a lot of visions of the future which torment him. Some of them come true, some of them don't. In this film, he has certain visions, ones that predict a future that he's trying to avoid. So he's conflicted with, you know, doing what he feels is right in the present moment, whilst also being aware that his visions are showcasing him a future that might become reality based on certain choices he makes. And that ratchets up a lot of tension within the film, which I think is really effective at portraying, and that keeps the drama at a certain intensity of this film, which has kept it really engaging. You've got his mother Jessica, who goes on an arc of her own. I'm not even going to say which route her character goes, but for those who haven't read the book, it's probably quite an unexpected one, and that shows a different side to her character. And the benefit of all these wild directions that the story takes is that it gives the actors new aspects to play around with in their arsenal, in the arsenal of their performance. So you get to see different sides of Timothée Chalamet, different sides of Rebecca Ferguson, and all the actors do a tremendous job in this film. I'll get onto them a little later. But I feel like, going back to Denis Villeneuve, I feel like he doesn't get enough credit as a writer. People credit him as a director, but as a writer, I think he's done a fantastic job with both films, but especially this one, by making changes to the book with which actually strengthens certain characters like Shani, who's played by Zendaya. And I think he deserves a lot more credit for that because what he does with her character, for example, amplifies the emotional and dramatic impact of the story revelations that happen with Paul later on in the movie. And he spoke before the film released about a perspective shift in the third act of this movie, where we go from focusing on Paul and seeing this world through Paul's eyes to suddenly seeing it through Shani's perspective. And the way he handled that perspective shift, I'm not going to tell you what happens within those moments, but the way he handles that shift is really, really masterful. And it lays the ground out for Zendaya to do some of her best performance work, her best acting that I've seen from her personally. And a lot of it is just with her eyes and her mannerisms and facial expressions. In loads of those scenes towards the end of the movie, she doesn't have any dialogue, but she conveys so much through her face, and it's a really tremendous performance from her in general. The cast is fantastic for various reasons. I mean, what's really staggering to me with this Dune franchise is how they've managed to cast a majority of who I'd consider to be the future of cinema in terms of movie stars. They say movie stars is a dying art. It kind of is. It's a dying thing. There aren't that many movie stars left. In terms of generational talent, who I think are going to be here for decades into the future, this film has a surprising amount of them. You've got Timothée Chalamet, who I think is already at that generational level. He's shown it. The same goes for Florence Pugh, who's in a much smaller role here. But if they do make Dune Messiah, which will be the third movie, and that's the second book, she'll have a much bigger role to play in that. You have Zendaya, who I think is on the cusp of being a generational talent. The same for Austin Butler. And I think that, yeah, this casting, there's also another character, another actress in this movie. I'm not going to say who it was because they didn't want to keep it a bit of a secret and a surprise. But there's another hidden actor in this movie who shows up in a brief role that kind of hints towards the direction that the next film will go in if they do another film. And she is a generational talent as well. And it was very exciting to see her appear in the movie and knowing that she's in this cast. And funnily enough, when people were doing fan casts on Twitter back in 2021 when they announced Dune Part 2, I remember suggesting two actresses who I'd like to see in Dune Part 2. Florence Pugh was one of them, and I mentioned another actress. I'm not going to name her name, but it turns out that both of those actresses were cast in Dune Part 2. So I'm going to take credit for that and say that I manifested it. But yeah, the cast, tremendous. One thing I really appreciate about Austin Butler in this movie, he was fantastic as Fade Rotha and fascinating to watch. And with minimal screen time, he made such a big impact with that psychopathic character that he had. But what I really enjoyed about his character was that you could read the subtle mannerisms, and that added so much to his personality, even when he wasn't speaking. Whether he's fighting in an arena in a gladiatorial battle, you could see the almost animalistic glee in which he takes out his opponents. He's there drooling whilst fighting because he loves the prospect of, killing the opposition. You get other scenes where he's confronted by Paul, and the way in which he assesses Paul in silence and just looks at him, you can tell he looks at him with a sense of admiration, despite the fact that that's his enemy. And there's elements like that, which I think that role really gave Austin Butler a lot to play with. And I never saw the Elvis movie that came out recently. So this, I think, is the first time I've seen Austin Butler in a movie. And I was very impressed with what he did with that character. He made such a big impact. And I'm intrigued to see what he does in future. And I'm intrigued to go back and watch some of his previous films because of that performance as well. Another standout actor in this film and character is Stilgar, who was portrayed by Javier Bardem. And I think that character embodies a lot of the core themes of this film, and he's a very important character in this movie because of that. And if there were a few characters I would tell you to really focus your attention on when you watch this movie, Stilgar would be one of them, because Stilgar embodies the power of religion and what can make it scary. Because the development of this character throughout this film is quite a scary development, but also a very realistic one. Which, if you're very in tune with religion and what it can make people do, and how religion can result in war, in violence, and other things like that, Stilgar represents all of that. And I'm a religious person, so I'm a Christian. And I always appreciate and find it fascinating when I can watch a fantasy story or read a fantasy story and see elements of religion being explored within that story. I find that very complex and very interesting as a religious person to see that reflected. And this film does that so well. And like I said, Stilgar is the vessel for that sort of exploration in this film. In the beginning of the movie, he appears to be a naively humorous follower within his beliefs. He believes essentially that Paul may be the Lisan Al Gaib, who is the leader of the Fremen, the prophesied leader of the Fremen. And yeah, there's a very humorous tone towards the beginning of the film. And it's quite interesting because I don't know if it's, I mean, it's definitely played for humor in the beginning of the film, but I don't know if we're supposed to find it as humorous as the audience naturally will find it. But there is a sort of naivety to his beliefs and how certain he is that Paul is this figure, this prophesized figure. And as the film progresses, you start to see that unwavering faith that he has in Paul become much more firm and much more serious, but in quite a sinister way. Not in a sense of Stilgar being sinister in himself. I'm trying to say this while dancing around spoilers, but in terms of Stilgar you get at the beginning of this film and Stilgar you get towards the end of this film, it's like two separate people. Because as he believes his faith is being fulfilled in what he's seeing, he starts to act like he's possessed. And that's because his faith and his commitment has reached a point of no return. And I think the way that Javier Bardem and the way that Denis Villeneuve wrote that character and the way that Javier Bardem portrayed it was really effective at displaying that. And I think it's the type of thing that will go over some people's heads in the sense that there's so much else going on in this film that you're not necessarily paying close attention to him. But if you do pay close attention to him and just focus on how he is and how he's portrayed at the beginning of the film, to how he's portrayed in the film's final act, you'll see a stark contrast, which I find to be really fascinating. And that's some of the nuance that this film brings to its subject matter and the complexity of his themes that I really do appreciate. Denis Villeneuve is a master of crafting large set pieces. The opening of Dune Part 2 is an example of this. It's immediately captivating and it's filled with suspense. And the scene is so well shot and directed that it immediately reminded me, oh yeah, we're in the hands of the man who directed Sicario, which in my opinion is one of the best films of the past decade, and of course has a number of iconic sequences of sustained suspense. But it's that real hardcore sci-fi stuff that Denis Villeneuve does so well, and he displayed it in Blade Runner 2049, where you are watching a sequence unfold, and as you're watching it, the way it's shot, the way it's paced, the way that it's just engages you, you immediately know in the moment as you're watching it, I am watching something special right now. And this is going to be a sequence that's going to stand tall in the lexicon of cinema for science fiction scenes. And there's loads of scenes throughout this movie that are like that, but the opening was such a strong and confident, bold step forward in terms of what this film was going to be, that I just felt in good hands. As soon as, not that I had any doubts in my mind at all, because I didn't have any doubts that this film would be good. But as soon as that opening scene began, I just knew, I was like, yep, he's going to knock this out of the park. Because the way it was staged, certain developments that occur in that opening, certain visuals, and just the way it's all paced, it's just tremendous. And that goes throughout the whole film. Whether it's dialogue scenes, whether it's action set pieces, there's just a grand scale to everything and a sense of assuredness from the creator, which, like I said, is just the work of a visionary. And it's so refreshing in this era of cinema where we often get films that feel like they're made by committee, made in a corporate boardroom, with a checklist. It's so refreshing to see a film which showcases an auteur at the peak of his powers, and that's exactly what Denis Villeneuve does in this film. I forgot to mention Timothy Chalamet. So Timothy Chalamet in this film, I've always said he's a generational actor, and he really shows it in this movie. He cycles through different levels in this movie, and I can't explain why, but when you watch the film, you'll understand it. But the certain levels that he reaches in this film really displays how he can really command the screen, even in a room filled with some veteran actors like Christopher Walken, Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, and other actors. He can still command the room and command the scene. And he's a very terrific actor. And he's really, years ago, I said he was an actor that I wanted to pay attention to and that I felt was a generational actor that was going to be someone special. And he's continuing to show it through this movie, the film that came out a couple of years ago, Bones, was it called Bones and All? That film, I really enjoyed his performance in that film. But I just think he's going to go right to the top, Timothée Chalamet. I think he's a tremendous actor. And I've just always been impressed with what he does. But yeah, Dune Part 2, fantastic film. What I will say, actually, surprisingly, and this may surprise some people given the reaction that Dune Part 2 has received, I actually still prefer the first movie just a little bit. I give both movies 5 stars. I actually gave both movies 4 stars on my first viewing of both of them. And then after my second viewing of both, it bumped up to 5 stars. So I do give Dune Part 2 5 stars. It's the best film I've seen so far this year. It'll probably be one of the best, if not the best film of the year. And highly recommend it in the IMAX experience on the biggest screen you can find. But I think why I prefer the first film is because the first film has that sense of awe and wonder as you're introduced to Arrakis. And I think seeing the pages of the novel translated to the big screen with Denis' vision for the first time in that first movie, I think that the wonder that came with that had such an impact. That's why I remember that first film so fondly. So although I do love this movie, I do like the first one just a little bit more. There's probably a lot more I could say about this film, but I think I've touched base on all the main things I wanted to speak about. I mean, you've got war sequences in this movie and action sequences, which are absolutely staggering beyond belief in terms of their scale, in terms of the visuals as well. The visual effects are tremendous. There's not a single visual effect in this movie that makes you doubt the realism. There's not a single visual effect in this film that you look at and makes you think, oh, that's a visual effect. You believe it all. All the stuff with the sandworms. In fact, let me finish on this note. There's a scene in this movie. It's one of the most iconic scenes of the book. It's Paul riding a sandworm for the first time, Shai Hulud. It's a pivotal scene of the Dune story, and the scene and how it was shot and portrayed in this film, it felt like I was watching one of those instantly iconic cinematic moments when I saw Paul ride that sandworm for the first time. Just the way it was, this whole sequence was set up, the way it was built up, and the way it was executed, all done from his perspective. So you really felt like you were in the moment with that scene. And I can't think of a way that scene could have been made better than what they did in this film. So that was a tremendous achievement alone. But the film as a whole, I think, is a fantastic film and one of the best of the decade for sure. But that's my thoughts on Dune Part 2. Thank you for listening. Make sure to follow on TikTok at Escapism Podcast for the video clips of this podcast and other things. And make sure to follow on your respective platforms so you don't miss any future episodes. And I'll speak to you guys in the next episode.